this morning I would like to give a few minutes for a general overview of the meditation practices that we have been exploring over the days, and remembering, of course, the fullness of the day. Every aspect of the day is worthy of interest, worthy of attention. And in fact, when we are willing to bring mindfulness to situations, are willing to be attentive, to bring attention to situations, actually it is an act of love. We have this experience sometimes, as you know, we're talking to somebody and our attention is hardly there. We could be with our children or our grandchildren, but our attention is somewhere else. It's fragmented, it's not full attention too. And somebody says, "Oh, you're hardly with me," or the child says, "Oh, you're hardly giving any attention." And so giving the situation really full, rich attention is an expression of love, it's an expression of interest. And our practice is to explore that through the fullness of the day. And so that, as we were listening to in the inquiry yesterday evening, sometimes it's quite valuable and important for our attention to look to the past, to look to what was, to see what we may need to be clear about, what understanding we can draw from that, and also and similarly with regard to the future. And so our view of unfolding events will naturally give more priority to the unfoldment of today, but also allowing attention to look to yesterday and look to tomorrow in ways which are necessary and important to us. However, if we find we're daydreaming, just lots of thoughts are arising, we're feeling a certain unsettledness, then I would say as a general principle to make use of the breath. I find, and others find as well, it's a very helpful and useful point to anchor on, to really make it a primary practice, so that hopefully the breath is like a good friend. We can bring our fullness of attention to it. It really gives us support, and may it be possible that in the course of our life, our mindfulness and experience with the breath, that we can have confidence so that we can witness the very last out-breath of our life in an untroubled way. And our meditation practices really can contribute to that. A friend of mine said to me, "Oh, I hope I die in my sleep." And I said, "For me, I hope not. If I die in my sleep, I'll be furious." I want to die conscious. I want to die, be with the last in-breath and out-breath. I want to see what the practice is like. I don't want to die in my sleep. I'll miss it. So sometimes in the our practice in all sorts of situations, our practice of mindfulness of breathing is really helpful and really, really supportive for us. And as I say, too, as the Buddha said, of all the meditation practices that he taught, let alone that are available as well, he said, "I cannot think of any practice which is so beneficial and so supportive as mindfulness of breathing. For calm, for clarity, for the ending of anxiety and stress, for physical, emotional, psychological well-being, for witnessing change, for being in touch with the rhythms of life, as access for deep happiness and contentment, for letting go, for being with what's unfolding." Benefits are many. That doesn't mean to say that we should always strive to be with the breath. We expanded out the mindfulness and giving care to the body and this whole relationship to the bare elements of the body, less with the appearance, less with all those obsessions we have and of the outer appearance, and much more with the bare strict event, body, vibrations, sensations, elements, the diversity, the form, the color, the different limbs of the body, the different parts of the body. And sometimes with that we do need to focus our attention on sometimes some parts of the body, and often of course pain or a particular area of sickness or whatever, but always remember that with the attention to it also comes or carries with it sometimes some other habits and tendencies. So what I mean in giving attention to a particular area of the body, not to do it so much that one forgets the rest of the body, so that the whole of the body is also being considered. We also expanded the field of attention, and sometimes being with the breath or being with the body can feel a bit restrictive. The consciousness can feel a bit tight or limited there. But our consciousness has this infinite capacity to expand. And so sometimes the real sense in our meditation is not to be with the breath, not to be specifically with the body, to expand and perhaps to include the space around us. Perhaps, as Alina was speaking, to include the listening there, to include the silence. The silence, the sound, or the space is another object of interest. The breath is an object of interest. The bodily life is an object of interest. But equally important is the objects of interest we call space. We call a sound, we call a silence. And we expand out to that. If we can feel steady and calm and clear with that, it will help to put our own, so-called, our own physical life, our own so-called existence, into another kind of relationship with something bigger, which we could call space, or we could call silence. If in the expanding of the attention, that opening out, we find that we're daydreaming, we're wandering, our imagination is filling up the space, we're speculating or whatever, then, and we notice that's going on a lot for us, then I would suggest be with the breathing. It seems to require a little bit more focus or a little bit more energy. Or the question might be, in the opening out of the field of awareness, what is significant about this? What is valuable about experiencing the element of space? And sometimes you and I, and some of you I've talked to one-to-one here, you've looked at your life, and you've said to me, you've used the word, you know, Christopher, I need to find some more space in my life. And so when we are meditating on space, that space between objects, that space around the body, that space around us, that space of sky above and earth below, that element of space, which is deeply loved and appreciated by human beings, that as we meditate, it's a great teaching, the word for space, lovely word, is akasha, a very nice word in the Pali. The element of akasha, on space, element, will, in giving us more space, and knowing it and experiencing it, may be the important stepping stone to finding more space in our life. And sometimes our life is so busy that consumes the space. Sometimes we're living so close to situations it consumes the space. So we're exploring, and as we find more space around us, just in quiet ways, then we can find more space inside. You know, sometimes we come, I mentioned in the hall here last week, we come into the Dharma hall, and one or two people said, oh, there's not much space in here. Well, I just say what we call in English the blindingly obvious. Just look above your head. Loads of it, etc. So sometimes the attention grasps the form. Body, 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 body. There's no space there. But sometimes, instead of grasping the form, we actually look at all the spaces between the forms. And I remember in California, because they have a rather beautiful, I have to say, $2 million, meditation hall there. And they have a door, on the side of the door, it says, this hall can accommodate 530 people. And I wanted it to be rechanged. This hall can accommodate 530 Americans and 1,000 Indians. But they didn't agree to my suggestion. I don't know why. Anyway. So sometimes when we look and perceive there, and if we're, sometimes we're grasping onto the form, and we have a practice of akasha, the practice of space, the practice of arupa, formlessness, and then we turned our attention to the inner life in a very specific way, and the deep aspect, or one of them, is the element of feelings, such as that. And we're trying to look at the feeling life in an unbiased, unprejudiced way. And what I mean by that is to be respectful and clear about the pleasant and the unpleasant. And if we're prejudiced and biased, of course, we will lean towards the pleasant and we will resist the unpleasant. This is the prejudice. Yeah, it's a human condition. Prejudice, everybody says. Bias, prejudice. This, but not that. And this is, as you know, the Zen masters say, being for and against is the mind's worst disease. And we see all the consequences of this, politically, socially, personally. For and against is the mind's worst disease. And therefore, in the world of the heart and the feeling life, with the pleasant feeling there, the unpleasant, part of our practice to endeavour to include both. Be quite clear, life includes both. And it's our practice to see if we can accommodate both. Not easy, but to accommodate both. And in that, the key question would be, the inquiry that inwardly would be, what do I make, key word here of the Buddha, what do I make of the pleasant feelings? What do I do with them? Do I appreciate them, acknowledge them, respectful to them, and all the ways that they may come, love and happiness and joy and contentment, and really beautiful things that they feed us. The nourishment of the heart is as important as nourishment of the body through food. Happiness is a nourishment for the heart, and it's a very important aspect of our practice. But do I make more than that? If I make more of it, it can show itself in fantasies, in desire, in craving, in wanting, trying to maximize the pleasant, the pleasurable. We want to catch that. It will end up as pain, as suffering. Similarly with the unpleasant there. it's an unavoidable in life. If one's own life is rather content and happy and grounded and centered there, there would be a receptivity and a clarity which is unpleasant of all the suffering which is around. So when you and I are not obsessing or worrying about our own suffering, and we're feeling, you know, happy and steady and calm, and there's love and presence, that will be something which shows to us just how much suffering is going on. We may not be suffering, but it will show us where there is suffering, and from that will come the love and the compassion. Quite naturally, we don't have to develop it, we just see. And that would say, whoa, what are the causes and conditions contributing to suffering? Sometimes with the unpleasant, again, never easy, when we grab onto it, there, rather than working with it, and when we grab onto it, how easily the grabbing on generates problematic states of mind. When we grab onto the unpleasant, anger, we grab something we don't like, and the reactivity, fear, we grab something about the future, and because something we don't like. So it's looking to acknowledge these feelings that arise, the unpleasant ones, and to be with it. In the middle between the two is tiredness, is low energy. And when there's tiredness and low energy, that's the middle, neither pleasant nor unpleasant, just some tiredness can come in, and the energy drops, the easily boredom can start, dullness can start, doubt can start, and sometimes, it quite often happens, I see for myself too, sometimes one is sitting and the wish is to develop a closer relationship with oneself. Energy is falling and one's actually developing a closer relationship with the floor, etc. And swinging backwards and forwards because the energy is dropped and one doesn't want to keep the eyes open or stretch the arms above the head. There's no energy left, not enough energy to lift the eyelid up. The eyelids are too heavy, they weigh a ton. So one's swinging and one's developing this, you know, intimate relationship with the floor. And if you're sitting on the throne up here, you see, it could be life threatening. You know, I've done nearly a few time to time near nose dives, you know. And when you've got a big nose, I mean, it's a big risk. I should take out an insurance policy or something. All right. So again, when energy drops, that's fine. You know, every night before we sleep, we're very happy the energy drops. We want to fall asleep. But when it drops during the day, be careful about unmindfulness. You know, the classic is driving the car. Low energy, high risk. Low energy, much suffering could come for oneself and for others. And sometimes it happens very easy. The good lady with the inquiry yesterday evening, I don't know the circumstances, her situation there and what the events were. And she's not here today because she has to go to Jerusalem for an operation with regard to the hand, and she told that leader and I, and we certainly wish her all the very, very best, and also lovely to hear of the love flowing, lovely to hear. So as I say, sometimes just in the process, mindfulness of breathing, one precious and wonderful practice. Secondly, the relationship to the body and the bareness of the body, elements of the body. not me, not myself, not who I am. Nevertheless, I'm mindful of, I'm respectful toward, I'm taking care of as an extraordinary expression of the nature. Thirdly, the expansion of the attention. The expansion of the intention begins to include some of the environmental factors. Space, very important one, very important practice for us. Another would be listening. Another would be silence. We just did meditations on silence in our day-to-day life, on space in our day-to-day life. On just listening would make a huge difference to our whole existence. These elements are important because they support life. Next, we went to the feeling life. And in the care and attention to the feelings there, and learning to be with what we feel, learning to see those feelings clearly, and giving that mindfulness is what, which the thought tells us, do I make of the feelings? What do I make of them? What do I do with them? And that seeing. What I would suggest in terms of any of the postures, not an absolute, but as a general principle, that if you begin with one of the meditations, to be fairly consistent all the way through. Say, you sit down and think, oh my, you know, my, I've just been thinking a lot, I'm not sure what to do, I do feel a bit unsettled. Okay, mindfulness of breathing. I really need to have a much clearer relationship with the body there. There's some pains in the body, or I don't like myself physically, or whatever it might be. Let me really give attention. So then the whole, that meditation period might be given to being with the body. I might feel, I just need to feel more expansive. I don't want to feel so restricted. I open the attention out. I'll include silence. I'll include space. I'll include the sounds of the day. Just open it out and feel that those elements of space around, such a real support. If the feeling life is important to me there, it's important for all of us as the other there, then just to meditate, what's the feeling? Not I am feeling, see if we can lower the I-ness. What is the feeling which is arising here, there? Can I just be quietly and calmly with the feeling, and just notice what I make of it. Is it pleasant? Am I building into it in an unsatisfactory way? Or is it just appreciation for that feeling, which is lovely? With the painful, unpleasant feeling, am I building problem? Anxiety would be the obvious one. Anger would be another one. Or am I just being with this feeling and just being quite clear, this is the feeling which is painful or unpleasant, just being very clear about it, no more. If I'm thinking a lot there, then to remember, never to forget, a thought is just a thought. If we remember that, life is so much easier. When we forget, a thought is just a thought. That's all. It never was anything more. It was never anything less. Just that, if you came here and you listened to me rambling on instructions and practices and thoughts, and just went, let's see, I went on this retreat, da 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 da, silence, 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 silence. However, one little thing was said. It just stayed with me. A thought is just a thought. Every knee pain, back pain, wandering mind, stuff, past life, it would be worthwhile because one just took one single little thing. A thought is just a thought. That's clear. That's it. Huh? So, about anything.
No.
Go on, ask, go on.
As opposed to what she's saying, as opposed to what?
Okay, so at times, as opposed to insight, opposed to seeing clearly. So sometimes we're thinking, we're getting very judgmental, putting down ourselves, putting others, building up, thinking, then suddenly. Actually, it's just a thought. That's all it is. It's just a thought. No more, no less. Ah. And when it's seen clearly, ah. Seems rather just a thought. And that's, well, I'm repeating. Yeah, go on, then. Yes, sir.
How do you distinguish thought from insight? And also sometimes thoughts are really important, like you want to do something, you need to plan it, therefore you need to think.
Yeah.
It's not just, oh, this thought, that thought, you need to use them.
Yes.
It's not, sometimes it's just a thought, and sometimes it's insight, and sometimes it's productive.
It's true. And I come back to little bit from yesterday evening with the two lovely inquiries that took place. And when something is authentic and valid and necessary, it has something creative or loving in it, then there may be some quite necessary planning taking place, as you pointed out, and we're trusting in something deeper there. That, in Dharma language, changes it from a thought to a reflection. What do I need to do to make this happen? Simple, clear steps out of a love of something. Love of creativity, love of service to others, love of space, love of commitment. And that thought is then called a reflection. But we all know, we're only too well, there is one heck of a lot of thinking going on, which has got no vision, no insight, just a lot of judgmental rubbish. For and against, approving and disapproving, likes and dislikes. And we say to all of this, the morning mantra, a thought is just a thought. To all of that we say that. All right. Let's have a sit.